honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. It's been 80 years since the first African-American Marines arrived at Mumford Point in North Carolina. It's been a decade since they were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, but only about 10% of those Marines eligible to receive it have actually done so. By sharing this story today, I hope that we can put a dent in that. Very few have told the story of the Mumford Point Marines better over the years than Robert Hammond, who would go on to a long career in public health. He was in charge of food safety at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles. After serving as a Navy corpsman at Brooklyn Naval Hospital and with the Marines at Mumford Point, he was sent overseas in World War II to Guam.
Later on, we had two black doctors. One was a Lieutenant J.G., another one was a full lieutenant. Alvin Lawrence was lieutenant. He was from Chicago. C.J. Jones from New York, from Brooklyn, he was Lieutenant J.G. They had some stories. I wish they were alive because they told me what they were up against as officers. A lot of the white sailors and Marines wouldn't salute them. And Dr. Jones went and put his hat on a post and told this Marine, if you can't salute me, you salute that hat. But he went through a lot. But if somebody, and he was a surgeon, and he treated a lot of those guys. And one of the things that they did, they carried segregation too far. They segregated blood. 1X for white, 2X for black, 3X for Mexican, 4X for Native American on the bottles. When blood is only A, A, B, and O, you know. And one time in surgery, I went and got, they were operating on this white guy. They needed blood, and they told me to go down and bring back some A blood. I brought back a bottle of A blood. I didn't know nothing about these X's, and it had two X's on it. And I handed it to the nurse. She dropped it on the floor, broke it. And the doctor there operated, what did you drop that for? And she said, we can't give him, use the N-word, blood. Wow. And that doctor said, listen, blood is blood. I wanted A blood, give it to him. I don't care what the X's are. It doesn't mean a damn thing.
Right.
So in the meantime, you had a hematologist named Dr. Charles Drew, who invented blood plasma. The United States wouldn't use its plasma, so he took it to England. And when Hitler was bombing England, 1945, tearing it up, there was a shortage of blood. The Americans wanted to know, you have a shortage of blood over here? He said, no, we use Dr. Drew's blood plasma. And they said, oh, we can't use that. It's crystal. We can't segregate it. And they laughed at the American doctors for that. And then they started using it. And right then and there, they start using this plasma. They took the X's off those bottles. And then Roosevelt died after that. When Roosevelt died and Harry Truman got in there, all sorts of things were happening in the armed forces, black troops, the army. You had Camp Van Dorn. You had Fort Bliss riots. You had Port Chicago. And there was one up, Shoemaker, there was one up there, Tuskegee Airmen, there's one in Louisiana. All these broke out, and it started affecting the war effort. And Harry Truman says, we're not going to have none of that. We're going to integrate the whole thing. And I don't care if those Southern colonels and generals object to it. They could get the hell out. That's what they could do. So the whole thing got integrated in 1948. And all that stuff stopped. My learning from being in the Marine Corps, a lot of those guys distinguished themselves. A few of them got, under Clinton, Congressional Medal of Honor. Some of them were dead. I think three of them were living. I think they gave Miss Daly, the first black nurse, they gave her one. I think they gave her one. I didn't get anything.
But one thing you did get with a lot of your fellow Munford Point veterans was the Congressional Gold Medal. To have that happen so long after the fact, more than 65 years after World War II, what did that mean to you? Was it better late than never?
At my age now, and with the experiences that I had in the Navy and Marine Corps, I knew the Golden 13. Matter of fact, George C. Cooper, one of them, was my boss in Dayton, Ohio, and I was the director of health there. And my whole career was centered around my corpsman activities in the Marine Corps and Navy, because I didn't want to do corrective medicine. I wanted to do preventative medicine, so I got into the environmental health aspect of it and followed that, public health. And that was my career. I was able to do a lot of things, especially here. I became the chief of environmental health for a county in Los Angeles, director of health in Dayton, Ohio, assistant director for Montgomery County in back east there, and World Health. I did a little bit of work with them. I'm a member of the Royal Society of Health. So my background was very based upon what I learned in the Marine Corps and the kinds of things that I did. I used to be the suture man. I could sew a guy up. I mean, really sew him up. And some of these Munford Pointers, even today, when they see me, they call me the devil doc. They say, see that hand, you sewed it up. And it was perfect. Dr. Jones used to say, who did this? I said, I did. He says, You need to be a surgeon. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep people from getting sick. They're not going to have any wars when I come out of here. So I was very grateful to have that kind of experience. I mean, racism, Jim Crowism, I broke down a lot of those barriers. And I've got 1,000 stories I could tell in regards to mistreatment, but I had some good treatment while I was in there.
So you can see the value of your experience and what it led to later on in your life, but I imagine it was still really satisfying to be there with all these other veterans who were mistreated but still served their country, that put their lives on the line, and to have the Congress of the United States hand you these big heavy medals and say, you know what, you're special. What was that like for you?
Well, I felt very proud of that because it made me feel that I'm 100% American in that. And I remember when we went to the memorializing of the Battle of Iwo Jima at Arlington Cemetery, President Clinton was there, and we were there, and he mentioned, he said, those men over there are members of the Double V. And we all laughed and did that to him. He knew what it was. He said they had two wars to fight, one at abroad and one at home, and they won both of them. Then that made me feel proud, and to get that Congressional Gold Medal made me even feel prouder because it brought back some pleasant memories, like at the Brooklyn Naval Hospital. When I was there, we were all lined up outside for the president. Harry Truman came to visit the hospital. And we were at Captain's Muster there. And he came down, came right over to me. He says, boy, he says, son, you're looking good. And he straightened my tie and shook hands with me. And he kept on going with his big hat. President of the United States. So all of these things turned to, you know, being a citizen of being born in this country. And I say, now, sometimes I say, now, who do I really belong to? You know, I'm not going to say I belong to this group. I belong to that group. I belong to all of them. So that makes me 100% American with no hyphens.
Amen. That's a great way to say it. And, you know, as we get short on time in the interview here, I'm just curious, when you interact with people, I'm sure you come in contact a lot with younger people who weren't alive when all of this was going on, who probably have no idea what you and those guys endured to create the opportunities that exist today. So what are the things that you want young people today in America to understand about not only the price that's been paid for their freedom, but in your case, the suffering, the endurance that had to take place to create some semblance of equality in our country.
I've been doing a lot along those lines because I belong to Omega Psi Phi fraternity, and every year, youth conference at USC, we had 1,000 people there. We had about 600 boys, and we mentor those boys every year. Now, the age group is from 8 to 18, and I have a health component in that, and then I have another component of talking to these boys in terms of their future. Like when I grew up, our future was to the stars. I remember Charlie Bolden got his picture, General. See, he was a personal friend of mine, and one day he was just a lieutenant in the Marine Corps. I said, Charles, what's your aspirations? His boy is about my son's age. And I said, Charles, what's your aspirations? He says, you know, I don't know. He said, I'm going to the stars. I said, you want to know something? You are. That's the key to it. My mother said, hitch your wagon to a star. And I told him, hitch it. And he went there, too. So I tell those boys that story about him. And I say, look, your future is in your hands. Stay out of these gangs. Go to school. Learn the English language and speak it right. Get rid of that slang. Pull your pants up. I said, too many of you young guys are going to jail, which is true. Our fraternity, if we could save 2 out of 10, we're doing a lot. And we save quite a few boys. And I tell them all, the best way to get your education, get it like I did. I went in the service. I came out with the GI Bill. That's another story of segregation, because we saved the historical black colleges by using the GI Bill to go to those schools. And those schools became famous. And I tell them, why don't you follow the basic principles that are handed down to you? Study Martin Luther King. He's a good role model for you. I said, that man went to jail. He caught hell, but he stuck to his guns. He made them pay. He made them pay for the discrimination that they had. That's what wrecked the Montgomery boycott, made them pay, right? I said, and you guys won't have to go through all the mess I did. You won't have to, because people did it for you, and you better live up to it. And I tell them, I said, make me proud of you. You don't have to be proud of me. You make me proud of you. And I tell them all, go into service. If you want to fly an airplane, that's the only place you're going to learn to fly one.
I just want to make sure that I say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for being willing to tell us about some of those difficult times and for sharing your story with us. Is there anything else that you want people to know?
Yes, that I'm not the only one. There are many others like me that have served this country, not only in World War II, but in the other wars. They serve in the service, they serve in Congress, they serve in cities, they serve in counties, and they're out there doing the kind of work that makes them true Americans. They're out here helping people to get better. And I think that's the key to everything.
The key to everything, helping people get better. Sincere sentiments shared by Robert Hammond. And one last encouragement from me. Maybe you can help when it comes to the mission of tracking down Mumford Point Marines who are still with us, or those who are not, and making sure their families receive the Congressional Gold Medal. You can explore more information at hometownheroesradio.com. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we'll be reminded yet again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.